Hi, you're listening to Boggy Talk, Faith Conversations in the Mud, a resource of Church on Bayshore.
Hey, welcome to Boggy Talk. We hope you're doing well. And I'm joined today by two incredible members of Church on Bayshore, Jeff and Linda Waits. Welcome to Boggy Talk, friends.
Thank you.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Yeah, we're so glad. Oh, y'all said that together. That was precious. It's like you're talking about marriage and unity or something here. You guys just said that like you've lived together for a while.
We're fooling them early.
Well, we're just thankful you guys have joined us today for this special episode. It's really special because James isn't here to join us where he's on vacation this week and doing some stuff with the convention as well as part of his, which is not vacation, which is work, but he's away. And so you guys are joining us, one, because we just finished our Wholehearted Marriage Conference. You guys soon will be leading a 6-week class on marriage. Mm-hmm. And so we thought this would be a great opportunity to have some love experts here with us, you know, and just sharing some things that you have learned along the way in marriage. I think you guys would agree with this. No matter how young or old you are, we all still have a lot to learn. You know, you guys, this season of your life are further along than others. And what I appreciate about you guys is that you're leveraging that and using that to help others and what you've learned along the way. And so today, I just want to dive into some questions that give you opportunity to share what God's done in your family and in your marriage as you've tried to honor Him. Yeah, so, yeah. Before we do anything else, I want everyone to get to know your story a little bit. So, you know, let's dive in there. How did you guys meet? And Jeff, why did you fall in love with Linda? And Linda, what in the world did you see in Jeff? Just kidding. Well. Whoever wants to who tells the better version?
Me.
Yeah. All
right. Okay. Well, my sweet mate, a good friend of mine, knew Jeff, and she knew me.
At Auburn,
yeah. And she thought that we would have fun going out together, and so she set us up in a way. And so Jeff called me during the week and asked me to go to the football game with him that Saturday. So I said, okay, yeah, sounds good. So on Tuesday night, this is kind of progression. Tuesday night, I went with some of my friends to Taco Town, and
that's a good name right there. Yes. not the same Taco Town that's here in Niceville.
Right. But yeah. So I was with some of my girlfriends, and there was a car in the parking lot, and it kind of looked like maybe that was Jeff's car. So we had all chatted about that outside, and then we walk in, and yes, it is Jeff. So we get introduced that day. We get to see each other and be introduced to each other. So then Friday night, his fraternity. Friday night, his fraternity and my sorority had a get together. And so
that's what they called parties back then. Yeah. They called them
get-togethers. Yeah. So I'm trying to avoid that word. Yes,
it was a band party.
It was a band party.
Very. It was not a church get together.
No, it wasn't. Okay, so my best friend and I, she drove us over there, and we went to this party. And so I see Jeff over there, and I'm sure he saw me over there. And he doesn't come and talk to me. And so probably about two and a half hours later, my friend is ready to leave. And I said, well, hold on a second. I'm going to go over there and speak to him. This is ridiculous. And so I walked over to him and I kind of pinched him on the waist. And then he finally did talk to me. And then the next day it was a football game and we had a great time. And pretty much from then on, we did not go out with anybody else.
Yeah.
We were a junior and senior in college.
I was slow to the start, you know. Thank goodness for the proactive intentionality of Linda, you know. But I, of course, when we had the date the next day, and but she's right, you know. I remember being very passive that night and not, you know, bold at all. You know, it's like, but it was, I don't know. I guess I sort of thought it was cool, maybe, which is
no, it wasn't cool.
You know, the typical guy thinks something's cool, but the girl's going not. You know? But anyway, yeah, that was a good. That was the first weekend, and from there we pretty much dated, and went from there. Yeah.
Oh, and then so how long between that and getting married, and then moving to Niceville? How did you get here?
Yeah, well, we were at Auburn University, and I was in the process of applying to vet school. I think we ended up getting married in 79, but that must have been about 77, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, and so we got married. We were dating while I was applying to vet school. When I got in, we hung around, and because we knew we would get married the next year, right when vet school was starting. And so we then, as a married couple, lived in Auburn for the 4 years of vet school. And pretty much after vet school, within a year, we had made our way through the guidance of God somehow. You know, we didn't know anything about Niceville, Florida. We're very thankful he did, you know, but he brought us here. We had a couple of little rocky roads of professional experience on the way here, but we feel like he led us to a great place, and we've been here since 84, you know, so this is what, 40 years, and mm-hmm. We've been married mm-hmm. 45, so most of our married life has been here mm-hmm. in Niceville. And we've been in this church since 84.
Yeah,
so we,
that's awesome.
When we came here, we called Brother Joe and said, tell us about your church. We were used to visiting a lot of Baptist churches and all, and but we said, we're not going to do that. We're going to just... You know, we're going to go right to, you know.
Well, I called it here at the church on a Saturday morning. I remember that.
Yeah.
And Brother Joe, the pastor then, answered the phone and just talked to me and told me about the church. So I felt better about things.
Yeah. And then we came and joined, and that was in 84. So.
Yeah. And things are pretty much the same here in the church since 84. Nothing's changed at all.
Not at all.
In 40
Not
years.
At all. That's right. It's a booming metropolis then.
That's right.
That's right.
So you guys have... You tell us about your kids and your mm-hmm. even more importantly, your grandkids.
Yeah, that's
so.
good, yeah.
Well, we have three sons, and we named them ABC, Andrew, Brandon, and Chandler. And then they are all married, and they all have a son and a daughter.
How funny.
So I know it. I was hoping that maybe I'd get one granddaughter. Just, mm-hmm. Lord, please let me have one granddaughter. And then
you sound like mom. I'm one of three boys.
Yeah.
When we found out that Eliza was a girl, my parents just flipped out. They were so excited to have a girl in the family.
That's right. So,
yes. Anyway. Yeah, well, thanks for letting us talk about the grandkids. Kids, yeah, we
I understand. I understand. And you guys, and I can, your kids and I can commiserate about this, because my kids are like, Nana and Poopa just let us do all this. And I'm like, let me tell you about the Nana and Poopa that were my parents. Like, we didn't get to do that. They're like, Nana and Poopa take us out to eat. And I'm like, yeah, but that's what we did, you know. But they do. And that's their job. You know, I think when we first had kids, I was like, I'm not going to let my parents spoil my kids, you know. And now that I'm a little older, I'm like, spoil them.
Yeah.
Give them what, do that. That's your right as
you're
a grandparent.
You're pouring into their lives.
We're on the same page, and they back us up. And I just love that they can do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, just then that's a special, a sacred relationship that I'm just like, we want to foster that. Well, I want you guys, as we dive in today, just – you guys married for 45 years and have learned some things along the way. And so that's really what I want you guys just to share, some of those things that you've learned along the way. So I'll start with this question. Your marriage now is still not without conflict. You know, no marriage is, but I think you guys have exemplified that you have learned things along the way. Mm-hmm. So knowing now, like, just looking back, what did you do early on in your marriage that has set you up for this stage of life? And added to that, if you had to do things over, how would you do things differently?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty wide open. Yeah, so this could be a 3-hour conversation.
Yeah, yeah, that's
give us the bullet points.
Yeah. We've with this opportunity, we've thought a lot about that, and we've got an interesting story. We feel like and we'll say right off the bat, 45 years of marriage, but we don't feel like it was 45 years of blissful marriage. We're very open that we struggled a little bit along the way. We feel like that was part of our story. Now that we look back on it, it didn't feel like that
at the time.
Back when we talked, I think a couple of years ago, we had a little marriage conference or class here, and we talked or at least shared. And I had written this. I won't read the whole thing, but it was sort of our marriage testimony. And that I wrote there that, we celebrated 40 years at that time. I'll say that we've been married 45 years. The last 30 years have been the best, so that's how we sort of look at it. And around that 15-year mark, we sort of needed help, wouldn't you say? And I would say that that help came in the form of introduction to counseling. We at that time, it's real interesting, Justin. It was like you hear about marriage counseling all the time now, but back then it was like there was this.
It was almost like a scarlet letter. What's wrong with you?
You can't
figure this out.
And there was no one in the area except one man over in Pensacola.
And it was like he's the only one who does any kind of Christian counseling anywhere,
Hard to imagine that now.
When I say counseling, just the idea of third party help, coming from a, Christian perspective, biblical basis. So we certainly are aware that some counseling people are a little concerned about and wonder if it's really biblical and things like that. So you sort of need to do your homework and all, but there's a lot of good Christian counselors out there who use the Bible as the preeminent basis for it. But for Linda and I, we didn't know it at the time, but what we needed was where the rubber meets the road. How does this play out? How does loving your wife like Christ loved the church play out, in our lives, in our home? What does that look like? And so we started learning things, about how to talk to each other, how to listen to each other, basics, honestly, if you can just take care of some of the most basic things going on in a relationship, about 90% of the problem gets taken care of, because it's like when you really boil it down, you just won't listen to me, you're not hearing me, stuff like that. So little techniques on how to do that better. Linda will talk a little bit more about what spoke to her the most. There was this one book that I'll be honest with you, I don't know how we got exposed to it, but it just spoke volumes to us. It's called Lasting Promise. And the best way I know how to describe it is that if you went to the marriage conference with Sean and Christina the past weekend, he's a psychologist, but he's also a strong Christian, and he just blended the two.
Right.
And so a lot of what he spoke about really resonated with us all over again, and was like, yes, that's how we can hear that. We really dig that or follow that or whatever,
I understand. Dig that.
I'm trying.
It was groovy.
60 piece. But anyway, that spoke to us. And so, stuff about how to, validate each other. I didn't have a clue. Mm-hmm. And I'll say this, I'm loving parents. I had a great, great home I grew up in. But I wasn't exposed to the best conflict resolution skills, I'm not blaming it on anybody, but I saw love and I saw longevity. But when it came to conflict resolution and how to talk and honor each other as we do that and not hurt feelings and not sort of carry stuff with you, I needed help in that area. And so this sort of helped me.
Another thing we did was we read some books, and one that meant a lot to us during that time was His Needs, Her Needs.
Yeah.
And that's written by William Harvey. Harvey, I think
that's right. Harley.
Okay, that's right. So anyway, that spoke to both of us about what his needs were and what my needs were. A lot of times what we try to do is we try to meet the other spouse's needs, what really meets our needs. Like, I would try to do things that would please me and try to do that to him because that's the best I knew to do. But he has different needs, and we learn how to meet each other's needs and realize that we have different needs. So, and then also, the book you mentioned, Jeff, is Lasting Promise. And that is a book that just is full of really practical information. And we learned there the speaker-listener technique. And that's just been a wonderful thing for dealing with conflict. It's just wonderful. I don't know how far we should go into that.
Yeah, well, explain what is that.
Okay.
First of all, Linda grew up in a different kind of family that I grew up in. I was three boys. I don't know what your family of three boys was like, but there wasn't any consideration for trying to talk and listen to each other.
Nope.
It was like I was the youngest, you know, so I usually was
that explains some things. Right there. It's just kind of kidding. I'm the middle child, so people just look over us all the time.
But anyway.
That's a dynamic for sure.
It is.
But Linda was always amazed at how loud everything was when my family got together. And I was always amazed at how calm everything was when she and her two brothers and parents got together. And what my family would call really, really connecting and really, really getting to know each other to her was like, why are y'all arguing all the time? You know, or something like that. And I would like, you know, wonder, you know, do you know, is everybody okay there at your house? You know, it's like, you know, they read magazines. They're very quiet and they seem to like that, you know. I'm like, you know, so anyway, you know, from that, so we learned about speaker listening.
We learned, what they suggested in the book, and this may sound silly, but it really works, is the person that's speaking holds a pencil. And so they get to explain.
Not a knife.
Not a knife. Not a shard of glass. No sharp objects.
No, just a pencil or a pen. So you hold it and you say what you want to say and how you're feeling about the situation or the subject. And you get out all your feelings, you know, you don't speak in pages, but maybe a couple of paragraphs. And then you give the pen or pencil to the spouse, and then the spouse speaks back what I have said. In other words, he parrots back what he thinks he heard. So then he gives it back to the other spouse, me in this case, and I agree with what he said, or yeah, that's right, but this point, that's not what I was saying. I was really saying this. So I give him the pen, and then he would repeat back what he thinks he heard, and most likely that was correct.
Yeah.
And then it would be his turn,
and
he would hold the pen and pencil, and then I would listen to him and repeat back to him what I thought he heard, what I thought he said.
You don't get your turn to get your talk in until after you've validated and clarified that you understand what they were saying.
Not that you agree with everything
they said, but that you at least understand what they're trying to say. Because you got to start there. I heard it described as you pull in McDonald's and, you know, I want number one, but I'll medium and then hold the fries. But no. Get the fries, but then no ketchup, please. And then add on a, you know, whatever. And then they come back and they go over it with you again. No. That's not what, I mean, you do that when you're ordering a McDonald's meal. Why can't you do that in a marriage where you try to really find out what's really going on?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I think communication is huge. And I think even people who are good at communicating struggle sometimes, no matter how well we communicate. But in the spouse relation, the husband-wife relationship, because we communicate differently. And you alluded to how we even communicate to other people how we want to be communicated to.
Exactly.
Yes,
or what our expectations. So you guys learned this in counseling, right? Is that what you said? So tell me, did you initially, when your counselor was like, I want you to try this, were you like, that sounds like a great idea, I can't wait? Or were you like, all right.
Yeah.
I mean, because I think that when you hear someone say that,
yes,
that's
yes.
a great idea. And then when you try to do it, you I think especially men.
Yes.
We feel like this is silly. Why do I have to do this?
It's, well,
but, so how did you guys react in that?
Well, exactly how you might expect at first. You know, even going to counseling was that way. And like, we can figure this out. We don't need somebody who's going to charge us, whatever. You know, the man speaking. What's it cost? You know, that kind of thing. And much less they're going to want to see you again and they'll never let you go. You know, so you got to always fight those things. But then when you come to actual techniques like that, sometimes it does. It gets you outside the patterns that have got you where you are.
Yeah,
okay?
that's a key.
And it's very intentional. And it's like, okay, I'll go through the motions. Yes, it seems silly. I'm talking to my wife with these rules and regulations. It's, I hope nobody else knows we do this, you know, or sees this. But what it ends up doing is validating someone, because one of the most validating things we do for each other with any kind of relationship is actually look at them and listen to them, because you're actually important enough to me to listen to. And when we don't listen to someone, we're really saying, there's other things more important to me going on right now than you talking to me. And we're all guilty of that. You can tell who's listening to you and who's not, even in a little social get-together. You know, that kind of thing. You know, so in a marriage, how much more important is that to say you're important enough to listen to, and I need to learn how to do that. So give me the pencil.
And not interrupt each other.
It is huge.
Or talk over each other, you know, that type of thing.
Sometimes we found that just doing that, okay, now what was it we were trying to reconcile? We feel better about it that becomes a mute issue because we've now shown that we care enough.
So that
happens some, you know.
Yeah.
But more times than not, it gave structure to something that had chaos otherwise.
Right.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Well, you alluded to this and just a second ago, but I think in our experience in marriage, we kind of didn't realize this probably until we were in our 30s, and it's kind of a natural time you start to realize this, and it's also when you're still young in your marriage, the impact of your family of origin, for better or for worse, we recognize our kids are going to be in the same position for better or for worse. They've learned things from us that are great, and they've also picked up some bad habits from us.
So
was there a time when you started to realize, like, hey, this is, what are some of those things, the baggage you carried from that, and we bring this baggage into marriage.
Yeah.
Did you realize that some along the way, and how did you deal with that?
Yeah, that's great. That's a great question.
And that's not to disparage anyone's parents.
And that's the rub, is because you, the longer you're married, the more you do realize that I thought everything was perfect, you know, and I still believe they're the greatest parents in the world, but I want to do things differently. Mm-hmm. And you sort of have a little bit of an initial betrayal feeling, like, I'm going to do things different than y'all did. And I hope, you know, that's not being dishonoring to you,
right,
but I don't think that's the route we should go. So that feeling sort of popped in a little bit. But more than anything is that I wanted to make I just desired more than what I saw. But when I got older and I could sort of assess things better, I wanted not just to make it to the goal line. I wanted it to have to flourish along the way, you know, that kind of feeling. I think that's what I was desiring. I don't know if I could have articulated it that way at the time, but I just wanted more. And I knew they were committed and loved each other, and I'm so thankful for that. But I thought there's room for improvement here, and I think that's God's plan is for us to grow, because we got kids coming up.
And in your heart is that your kids will have better marriages than you have.
Exactly.
That's your desire.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes,
you right.
It certainly is.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Very cool. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm not going to say anything else.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Well, so how did you really, so we're going to talk through the different seasons of life, because there's the newlywed season, and then you move out of that. And I'm not sure how soon you had kids, but then you entered that stage of having children, and they grow up, and there's teenagers, and there's different seasons of life. Mm-hmm. And how did you guys, really this whole series we've been doing on Boggy Talk is about God's vision and our vision, and trying to make our vision God's vision. Mm-hmm. How did you guys strive, for better or for worse, to prioritize God's vision for your life in these different seasons of marriage?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think there was a deep desire in both of us to have a really godly marriage. Mm-hmm. And we very much wanted to pass that on to our boys. You know, that was just always something really important to us. So that's why we did these things, you know, is going to counseling and reading books and studying and trying to improve. And I will say that Jeff was on the page of, you know, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to make it better. We're going to make it right. I'm going to go to counseling, and I'm going to do what it takes, and I was committed to do what it takes, and that's huge. Both people need to be willing.
Yeah, you have to have an equal willing partner.
That's right. That's right. And to go ahead and work that hard together, both of us.
Yeah, we were blessed to have that. Now, we had conflict, but we were blessed to say, okay, we have a common goal. What I do want to make sure, though, is that sometimes – that's not the case for everyone, and I don't. If as long as there's one, who's,
I'm married to an emotional man.
Yeah, it's good.
It is good.
Yeah, don't give up if you're the only one, because all you can do is what you, God's called you to do, and that speaks volumes to your spouse.
Yeah.
And it
that's
will.
Good.
God promises that. That there will be a return for that. And one of Linda's favorite verses during our struggles, it was, remember?
restore. Restore the years that the locusts have eaten.
Yeah.
So for the first 15 years, it wasn't great, you know, and it was better at times and up and down.
It wasn't all terrible.
No. No, it wasn't all terrible for sure.
Yeah.
But because we had a lot of fun and our kids, we were married 4 years before we had children. Mm-hmm. We started our family after. Jeff got out of vet school. I taught school while he was in vet school. And but we were ready to start our family.
And so
we did.
So for that person who may feel like, you know, I'm the only one doing it. What can I do? Well, you keep plugging. You keep doing the right thing and praying and doing what God has shown you to do through Scripture. And he promises that that will not be wasted.
Yeah.
And that's a beautiful story when you see that lead the other spouse to go, wait a minute, something's different here. I need to buy into this because I know. And then God brings them together. That's awesome. I love those stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really good. And I think, you know, thinking through the timing, you know, that first 15 years, you made a big move. You started a business, you know, you have young kids.
Yes.
And you're just trying to hold it all. I can imagine. And I think a lot of people are in those seasons of life.
Okay, I'm going to tell this little part. He also was like 30 years old, and all those things were going on.
Yeah.
And he was elected a deacon, and then it wasn't too long, he was chairman of the deacons.
Yeah.
So he was opening the business, running the business.
I was chairman of the deacons before I hardly knew what a deacon was, you
that's
know.
Funny.
But it was all part of the plan.
Yeah.
Great experiences there too. But you know, just a lot going on and a lot of potential for busyness, you know,
I agree. So was there like a moment, like when did the light bulb go off for you guys? Like, hey, we've got to get help. I think that's like people feel that at different times.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When did that happen? And was it, maybe it wasn't just one thing, but what was that like? Because I think a lot of people are there, like, but they don't even know it. So what did that look like for you? I mean, you don't have to go through the details or, you know, but how did that light bulb go off for you guys?
I know the year. I mean, we've already mentioned the 15-year mark. That's when it happened. You might can remember more of those.
I think you both just know that
we're not happy.
It's not going to be good if we don't reach out and do something different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the old definition of insanity?
Yes.
Is keep doing the same thing.
And over and over.
Over and over again. And then expecting something different, you know. And so I think, God's glory and that somehow he instilled in us that vision to say, I don't think this is going to end up good if we don't redirect our path.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in church and we were, we were in Bible studies, you know.
Really seeking God, really seeking out how to make our marriage work.
That's why the counseling/Christian psychology portion spoke so much to us. And sometimes other people don't get the same, you know, benefit. But I do know for us, we got, you know, down to earth, you know, how to talk to each other, how not to talk to each other, what escalation means, you know, how not to escalate an argument to where it starts with, why didn't you clean the dishes, to I'm fixing to walk out the door.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, didn't this start with dirty dishes?
Right. And now much more under the surface.
Yes. Yeah.
You know,
yes.
And how to prevent that, you know, because that's not good, and you can do something about it if you just know a little bit more. And so those are the kind of things that spoke volumes to us. But I think there was just a moment where we both knew that it's time, and we've heard about it, and we know that we don't want it to be not biblically based. So we looked into that, and God opened up some doors.
Yeah.
And friends helped too.
Yeah, you know, right. Yeah, for sure.
Names,
yeah, yeah.
Stuff like that.
Something that you kind of touched on was, now I kind of forgot it.
It's all right.
Was it during that era? Because.
Oh, I know. Sometimes people, one or the other, or maybe both at different times, will say, hey, I've just had it. I'm just going to not stay married to you, or however they want to say it in that way. That is so damaging, so threatening. It's just a really not a good thing to say to someone.
Yeah, there's some things that just should be off limits,
yeah,
you know.
That's what I'm trying to say.
And just agree on, you know, we'll never say that.
Mm-hmm.
You may feel it, but if you're feeling it, don't say it. You
keep
know,
it to yourself.
It's hard to reel that back.
That's
yeah,
out of bounds.
It really is. So yeah.
Yeah. And never say never or always.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's so fun. In premarital stuff, I'm doing premarital counseling with a couple right now, and for years I've always talked about, you know, communication. I'm like, here's the number one rule. Never speak in absolutes.
Yes.
Like, you always or you never.
Yes.
And I remember, this is just funny. I'll never forget. I was actually, like, there was a couple in a previous church, and they were just having a hard time. And they were significantly older than me.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, we just need someone to talk. And literally, like, I was like, well, hey, here's what I'm hearing. You're saying he never does this. And I said, Mr., you know, your name. And I was like, is that true? And he's like, I can't stand it. And so I was like, so here's the rule. We're not going to say absolutes.
Right.
And then she literally, like, the next thing she says was, I was like, no, I'm going to stop you right there. And I want you to say that again. I was like, and in my mind, I'm thinking, I'm like 30 something. And this woman is like old enough to be my parent, and I'm literally like talking to her like, now we're going to redo that.
We're
going to say that again with the right word. You know, that's how you feel.
Yeah.
But I have to do that to my, and Christy, I appreciate, I mean, she's far more mature in these ways than I am. But that's something we've had to learn. Like, you just, when you do that, you automatically put people on the defensive.
Yes,
exactly.
Oh, yeah. I always do that.
Yeah.
In those moments of heightened emotional escalation, like, we revert back to our middle school self. I feel like, you know, we have a lot of middle schoolers in our home, and they're sarcastic. And if you say, they're so new, you have to be so precise in your language.
Yes.
Because if you say, well, you didn't, I'm like, hey, put that up. And they don't put it up. Like, you didn't say put the milk up. You said put that up, and I didn't know what you meant. And I'm like, oh my word! But we revert to that, like, undeveloped emotional, like, you know, our brains just firing an emotion.
Exactly.
I'm so glad you said that, because that's just a helpful principle. Never, you know, if it's a black and white issue, like, you know, maybe there is room for some absolute.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
when you're in the heat of an argument, just moving away from that is very wise counsel.
Yes,
counsel.
It seems like Sean and Christina may have hit on some of those things this weekend in their special kind of way. I can't remember them right now. Maybe I'll think of them later. But that's some good point there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, now I think more. I mean, this is the way the world works, and this is the way culture works. We know we will always, and you know, probably until Jesus comes back, be moving in such a way in our culture that there's less and less value in our culture for God's definition and picture of marriage.
So
there's increasing pressures, and I think even within Christianity, there's we are so influenced by culture in the world that people more easily give up in marriage and don't fight through or persevere. You know, and again, there's a lot of grace in this and there's a lot of nuance in this because we recognize there are some situations that are not safe or, you know, and that's not what we're talking about right now. We're just talking about people who just get to a point and they're just like, I guess we're done. I guess we're done and move on. So what advice do you give? I mean, one of the things that you guys do is you serve as a mentor couple in a life group. And so you have relationships with younger families in our church. And so you're and you have kids who are this age, who are, you know, in that season of life that is just hectic and busy. Just what's some practical advice that you would give to really how do you keep God's vision the center of your marriage, God's vision for marriage, what your marriage is aligning to?
If you were at the marriage conference, when we were sort of given a little promotion for the study that's coming up for the meaning of marriage, it's by Tim Keller and his wife, Kathy. You may remember me mentioning this, and I'll mention it for those who weren't there, but Linda and I currently know within our close family friend network of three couples who have said the words, "Why do we need to get married? Why do we need a piece of paper?" And they're not, they don't all know each other. It's like, you're kidding.
None of them know each other.
And this just is all within our little network of relationships. So you have to go back to the basics. You know, why are we even getting married in the first place? What is the meaning of marriage? You know, I mean, that's a great title for that study that we're going to have, because if we don't know what the purpose of it is, we don't know how to achieve the goals of it. And so the foundation is Scripture and God's plan for couples to reflect the gospel, you know. And so when people say they don't want to get married, you know, you really have to get back to the basics. Do you and try to somehow, with God's help and the Holy Spirit, try to find that common ground where you can try to get to that point of, why do you even want to be married? What do you think marriage is? And then from there, you know, you'll probably find out, most likely, if it's the culture at large, it's really just two people who think they want to live together and they really like each other a lot and they feel romantically and emotionally attached to each other. And that we all know lasts maybe 3 months, maybe 3 weeks, you know, maybe 3 days, who knows? So without some kind of purpose, then they're really setting themselves up for failure, you know. And if they say, well, why do I need a piece of paper? You know, if I could I read what Tim Keller says in his book?
Go right ahead.
About, so, and this is from the book Meaning of Marriage that we'll be going through, you know, March 6th, next week.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
It's not too late to register.
When someone says, I don't need a piece of paper to show love, you might say, yes, you do. If you love the way the Bible describes the love of two people who want to share their lives together, you should have no problem making a legal, permanent, exclusive commitment. And that's just the beginning of the foundation of what a gospel-centered marriage is. But at least it hits on those terms of, you're worth me making a long-term investment in, because there's a purpose of this marriage that goes way beyond emotions and feelings. And if someone can ever start grasping that, and we all know that it really takes a move of God to show them that, but we can all sort of play a role in that by upholding the standard of marriage so that they can at least know, well, you know, we're living together and I'm fine with that, but they think there's something more to it. You know, maybe I ought to at least ask them more questions about what they're really talking about. And hopefully that'll be a, you know, segue to them becoming, you know, followers of Christ and then wanting to do it the biblical way.
Right. You know? Absolutely. Yeah. I think, we say often disappointment stems from expectations.
Yes.
People just have very unrealistic expectations of what marriage is going to be like, that it is, you know, it's, we talked about a few weeks ago, the premise of the book Sacred Marriage by Gary Thomas is that God, you know, God's purpose of marriage isn't to make you happy, it's to make you holy.
Yes,
and he does that. I mean, no other, there's plenty of other relationships that God uses to make us holy, to refine us, but none like the marriage relationship because of the intimacy of that relationship. Right. And, you know, for better, for worse, you know, we see, you know, a friend of mine once said, he's like, if you would have asked me before I got married, Chris, are you a selfish person? He was like, no, I'm not selfish. And then I got married. I'm like, I'm so selfish. Yeah. I'm so selfish. Yeah. You know, you don't realize it until you're like, you know, and you really, he's one of the kindest, most generous, loving, servant-hearted people. And then he's like, but I'm so selfish. It's because we have these expectations of what it's going to be like, and then it's not that way. And then we take it out on that person, you know, because of all these different threads of our family of origin and how we handle conflict, how we communicate. I mean, these are common themes, that these are the struggles of marriage. And this is why you guys have hit on it. And I just think counseling is so important and vital. And, you know, we often need help outside of, and we always need help outside of ourselves. We need the Holy Spirit.
Right.
But even then, we still need people to help us, you know, and you could do class upon class upon class and grow in all these things.
Yes.
And I think that's what sometimes people, and this was hit at the marriage conference, people want the practical tools, which is good, but practical tools don't always change the heart.
Right.
You know, and our heart has to be what God changes in this.
Right. And that's one thing we want to make sure, because since counseling and psychology, and by the way, our middle son is a PhD psychologist who counsels now. And and Linda was, because of the impact counseling had on our marriage, Linda poured into him the vision of saying, Brandon, you have a lot of skills in communication, we've noticed, with your friends. Have you ever thought about counseling, you know, when he was old enough to
In 10th grade.
And so now he's got his PhD, and he's just opened his own practice in Ruston, Louisiana. And that's, to us, just like a sunrise, or just this moment of our life and together that, wow, what we feel like that was birthed through some of the struggles and the disappointments that we went through to where you could do that. And I give you credit for that, because you saw that in him. And he was always the peacemaker out in the soccer field or the basketball court. And
was
stuff
he the
like.
Middle child?
Yep.
Yes.
Hey, I got kids. I was like, you know, some of these things we learn.
That's right. Well, he loved sports, and he just wanted everybody to be happy so they would keep playing with him. You know, whether it's basketball,
so
football, soccer, whatever.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Oh, it takes a middle child to recognize middle child sometimes.
Yeah,
Having said that, Justin, so psychology and science has been a big part, but I don't want anybody to get the wrong impression. We know that that's the after, that's what comes after a relationship with Christ and a biblically based purpose. But from there, let's face it, we can know what the Scripture says about loving your wife and submitting to each other and honoring each other. But what does that really look like? So the basics start in Scripture. How it looks like can be enhanced with other things, as long as they're done the right way and through Christian counselors, you know. So to us, it was a natural progression, and that spoke to us. We don't ever want anybody to think we think all the answers are in some kind of psychology science book. Mm-hmm. We don't think that at all, but we do think, just as this weekend with Sean and Christina, you can see, I think, a perfect blend of Christian, a Christian who's sold out to Jesus, who knows how to help others, put it to the pieces of the puzzle together a little bit.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. That's good. Well, I guess before we go into our kind of Mount Rushmore segment of things, really, is there anything else you guys want to add to what you shared? I know you've got, you guys have some great notes. I just want to make sure that you're not, you know, as you're going through this, you haven't skipped over anything that you really wanted to say. Anything you can think of?
I think you want to start with that. Like, if we could go back.
Yeah, if we could go back. Go back in time. Yeah,
go back in time.
Okay.
What would you do?
Okay. We went to a marriage conference, and it was by, hold on. Help me out.
Rossberg.
Yeah.
Gary.
Gary Rosberg, sorry. Yeah, yeah. All I could think of was Gary Smalley. I knew that wasn't right. Yeah. Gary Rosberg. So we went to a conference with him and his wife, and it was really, really good. And I remember one of the things he said is each year you should either, you know, get away and go to another marriage conference or go see a counselor just to do a checkup, kind of like you would with your doctor, you know, every year we should go to our doctor and get ourselves checked out and just, you know, to keep it on the right path.
Yeah, you know? That's good.
Yeah. For me, Sean touched on this in the conference, and it brought back a flood of memories and feelings. And that was when he asked us to look at your spouse and say, you're fired from having to meet, you know, all my needs.
Yeah.
And then your spouse looks at you and says, you're fired from having to meet all my needs. Because there was a phase, and during that stage where we were looking to each other to fulfill us and to meet our needs and to make us feel worthy and full in life.
And whole.
And I wish we'd known that earlier. Yeah. I think deep down we know that only God can do that, but we were making that mistake. And if we could have looked at each other and truly meant it, you know, I think that would have been powerful. Mm-hmm. And then Linda's, and I'm just, this is a confession here, Linda's always said, why don't you pray with me more? You should pray with me. I want you to pray with me more. And I've just, you know, I think I would, I'm trying to prioritize that more now, you know, even after 45 years, you never stop, you know, but I could have done that a whole lot more, you know, and I feel like I got a lot of room for improvement and wish I had done that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. We always have things when we look back, you know, how would I do it differently?
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about the being fired, that was a great moment in the conference. Wow. You know, and he talked about the whole Jerry Maguire, you complete me. Everyone was like, oh, and he's like, that's terrible. That's terrible. And I agree. Like, I remember in like, even then being like, you know, and that was, it wasn't from a sound theological position. It was more of that, like, I'm independent, you know, like, and I think, like we're such creatures of paradox, is that we want to be fully independent.
Yes.
Yeah, we want somebody else to meet every need.
Yeah.
Yes.
We want both of those things. And like God hasn't created us for that. Like, he's created us for him. And then regardless, I mean, he does meet our needs through each other. That's part of his design. Yeah. But ultimately, those needs are met by him, not the other person.
Yeah.
And so releasing them from that pressure.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're not designed to be each other's savior.
No.
Right.
You can't be.
No.
Right.
And releasing people from that expectation ultimately frees you to experience that from the Lord, which is what we're designed for.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is good.
Right.
Amen. Yeah. Well put. And Justin, I just want to say, when this whole thing started today, you had me at hello.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well played.
That happens to be one of our favorite movies.
That's one of our favorite movies of all time and our whole family. So.
Yeah.
Well, hey, let's wrap it up with this. We're going to do a little Mount Rushmore.
Okay.
And we're going to say this. Give us your Mount Rushmore of your most meaningful moments or principles that affected your marriage. So for good. So the Mount Rushmore, these are the heads of the mountain that, you know, just principles or experiences that you guys had that really helped shape your marriage for the better.
Okay. Well, when we've been married 15 years, we decided that we needed some time away, so we went on a cruise. And we were driving from Niceville, headed towards Freeport, going east. And we knew this song, Here Comes a Miracle. Mm-hmm. And so we looked, and there was a rainbow just from, you could see, you know, both sides where it ended and where it began. And so the song was on our radio, and it was, here comes a miracle, here comes a miracle. And then with the climax, here comes a miracle. And right when that song was playing, we just went under that rainbow.
Oh, yeah.
And that was so cool to us. And, you know, it's kind of like, okay, you know, a new beginning is starting now.
Yeah.
You know? So that was
That's cool. Don't you love how God is in the details?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's just like, you didn't have to time that way, Lord, but you did it.
Yeah, right.
He loves his children.
Yes, he does.
He does. And he uses amazing what did you say, paradoxical?
Yeah. While, you know, I sometimes make up words that may not be a word.
Is that the right
word? you add adverb endings to words and it makes it sound like, you know, I know paradox is a word. I'm not sure that's the right way to paradoxical.
Life's not linear, right? It's not a straight line. It's real crooked and crazy, you know? And so even within that, and I have to say this for the sake of James, who couldn't be here, and I'm thankful that in one kind of way James isn't, because he would get me for this. He would crush me for this. But that song was Ray Bolt's.
Oh, yeah.
So he asked for a Ray Bolt. But God uses broken people to do great things for Him.
Right.
And so anyway, that song meant a lot to us through the years.
Yeah.
There's another moment we had. Linda and I don't travel all that much, but we did go to New York City one time with Steve and Donna.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we just had a blast, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we went to see Wicked on Broadway, you know, the Broadway presentation. And when we walked out, there were all these people wanting to pick you up and take you back to the hotel on these, I think it's like a tricycle with a wagon. I tried to look it up. You call that a pedicycle or something like that? Anyway,
that sounds right. They were all over the place.
So this guy, and he ended up being like a college student. He came over and told us what it would cost. And so we had several blocks to walk, you know, in downtown New York City. And so he got us set up there in that little carriage, put a blanket on over us. And I could see him sort of check us out a little bit. And he went to his iPhone. And I could tell what kind of music these people like, you know, wonder how old they are. So anyway,
he plugged in
that song True, you know, but what, how do you say their name?
Spandau Ballet.
Spandau Ballet.
Yeah.
And so anyway, every time we hear that song, we go back to this moment. But anyway, there we are riding down the middle of New York City, in and out of traffic, all the sounds, the lights. It was sort of cool with a little bit of snow, and we felt very safe, you know, at that time. But it was just with that song in the background, even though that wasn't exactly our music, you know, it sort of came to represent a real special moment.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We got a kick out of him sort of checking us out, trying to meet our need of what would be romantic for them.
Yeah.
And also, anyway.
Actually, the song, I really enjoyed it. I mean, you know.
At the time,
also now real special.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. So that was a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if we've mentioned Lasting Promise, but that's a book that we've gotten a lot out of through the years. And one thing it talks about is the love bank, and it talks about making deposits, and also we make withdrawals. And so the withdrawals are what we need to try to not have as many and have more deposits. Do you remember what it was? Is it like every withdrawal, we need 5 more deposits,
something like that. Yeah.
Yeah,
when guys are bad about thinking they've built up a big account.
And really
what it is they're so overdrawn that they've only brought it up, you know, to barely below even, you know, they're still in the red, and then they do so, I can't please her, you know. But anyway, you want to have that idea of making deposits and very few withdrawals if possible.
That was
a concept we drew from a lot.
In that same book, Lasting Promise.
That book just meant a lot to us. It seems like it's a very biblical way to bring home things that spoke to us and probably would speak to a lot of people about the basics of communication. And I always go back to the basics, because I feel like it's, you know, in some ways it's not rocket science, and then other times it seems like it really is, you know what I mean? But if you go to Scripture, you see it goes back to some basic, you know, fundamentals of the faith, and it helps take you back to honoring and loving and validating and submitting and
and it gives examples of that in the book, so it makes it real practical.
Yeah.
You know, so that's very helpful.
Yeah, and me being a scientific background, when they give a lot of research and they'll say, we've interviewed 1,000 couples and we found out this, or, you know, we found out, you know, the statistics show that if you do this, you know, like in Tim Keller's book, if you think you want a divorce, if you'll just stay together for X number of years, you'll most likely stay married the rest of your life. Things like that, where they've actually, it's no rhyme or reason to it other than some practical things that sometimes you don't know what to do. You just hang in there. Mm-hmm. Hang in there until something good happens. Yeah. You know, so that's one of my messages, you know, and because statistics show that if you're hanging in there, you're probably doing more than that too to try to improve it.
Yeah.
And you just, you know, with a commitment, you know, at marriage, then you have something to hang in there for.
Yeah.
You know, it causes you to hang in there. You get the benefit of some of those statistics. But if you're not committed enough to even get married, it's easy to walk.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's good.
Stuff like that.
All right. So that's three heads on Mount Rushmore.
Three heads.
What's the fourth?
She's got the fourth.
Okay.
It's just Jeff. Just Jeff up there. Jeff.
That's it.
Just put his head up there because he's just so romantic. Just does all the right things.
That's exactly right. Well, one thing that we've done throughout our marriage is get away. And it's been important to us. When our children were young, we'd go locally here, maybe to some place, and spend a night or two away and just relax, refresh. Yeah. And because you don't want to spend a whole lot of time just traveling when you're, you know, got little kids at home. And but it's just good to get away, be together and just refresh and relax. Mm-hmm. And we've also done that, you know, and just going out to eat. Get a babysitter, you know, just go do something fun, not necessarily, but, you know, out to eat, but just anything, you know, go to the beach, walk around the commons, whatever, you know.
Well, I think that's a really hard thing to do if you're not intentional. I think that's you know, communication, you have to be intentional, but time together, I think, especially when there's kids and there's jobs and I mean, that's something we've struggled with, you know, is just making that time to be together, to just be together without any distraction.
Right.
And, you know, we used to, when our kids were little, we just tried, like, hey, we couldn't afford to go out much. So we were like, hey, what we can do is put our kids to bed really early. And so when our oldest four were young, I mean, they were in bed by 7:30 so that we still had brain power and, you know, and energy just to talk with each other just be with each other.
Yeah.
And now that our kids are teenagers and we have two younger kids, our older kids love to remind us that our younger kids have way later bedtime. It's totally not fair. And I was like, well, to be fair, they didn't have teenage siblings who had no ability to be quiet at all. So we can't put them to bed at 7:30 because you guys are so loud. I don't know where they get that. But I'm like, you guys are too loud. I can't put them to bed. It does no
that's
good.
Awesome. Yeah.
So they love to remind us of the inequities of their childhood.
Yes.
You know?
Of course.
Yes.
You know, I'm like, hey, and I would say, we're different parents because we've grown up too.
Yes,
here's our list of things we're apologizing for.
My goodness.
We do.
We're just at our core. I mean, we've hit on it multiple times. We're all sinful, fallen, selfish people. And you take two selfish people at the core and they get married and we expect everything to go rosy.
Yeah.
You know, well, I mean, you know, thank goodness.
What could go wrong?
Amen. You know, so without a biblical perspective and the truth of God's word firmly planted in our heart, it's just not going to work, you know, so because we're just set up for failure.
Yeah.
You know, in our very nature, you know, what's in it for me, you know, but
Well, a couple of key things I think you guys have hit throughout here, throughout this time. Granted, we could talk for a long time, and you guys have a six-week class coming up. You guys, it's not too late to register, churchonbayshore.org/events. You can sign up for that. But a couple of big themes I hear you guys saying is a commitment to honor God and a commitment to each other. I mean, that's the foundation right there. Like, you're committed to each other. And then you got help.
Yeah.
You know, you had support from the church. I mean, it's you have now friends that have been your friends for a long time, and you've been through a lot, and so we need those kinds of relationships, which is why we as a church are saying, hey, you got to connect, you got to belong to God's family, you got to be in a life group, you need people, you need people.
For sure, that's huge.
And then you got outside help, and I think that if you can do those three things, like if you can honor God, like commit to honor God, commit to honor each other, and be surrounded by help. You know, and support, you know, whatever that support looks like. Not everyone. I mean, I think everyone could benefit from counseling. Not everyone needs, but I think probably way more people could benefit than who take advantage. Yeah. And then just the support of other people who are holding you accountable, who are running the race with you. They're just as tired as you are, but you're like, we're gonna make it. I mean, that's like with our friends sometimes, it's literally just like, hey guys, we're gonna make it, right? Like we're gonna, and we're here with you. And if you ever do something stupid, I'm gonna be the first one knocking on your door. That kind of stuff. We just need people.
Yeah, we do.
We need people.
Yeah. And it never ends. So you were asking earlier about our stage of life. We're retired age now, and it's weird. When you get our age, we'll probably be long gone, but you'll realize, you know, it is an odd stage of life because you're trying to figure out where you fit in.
Yeah.
Everywhere you go, not just church, but everywhere you go, what's my purpose? You never stop looking ahead, you know, and
we've got
people like Mary Wright and people like that that have taught us that and many, many others. But as far as marriage goes, it doesn't, you know, we're in the process of trying to figure out how not to let our marriage go stale and just boring, you know. We're learning, we're looking, we're trying to, you know, again, look for the same type things that helped us earlier, how to sort of remember all the good fun moments and how those can still happen, you know, and not to, like you said, not to become just roommates, you know, because I don't think that ever has to be the case from what I understand. And a lot of couples are out there actually ministering to people, like as we enter this phase, they're out giving some seminars about this, and also maybe we need to connect with those and keep learning, you know, because we're in that stage right now.
So in every season. Thank you guys so much for just taking the time to share and to live on forever on the internet in your marriage advice. Your grown kids can listen to this and fact check your name, right?
We don't really want to know.
But I think you guys have good relationships, and that is a goal. I mean, healthy relationships with your adult children.
Yes.
And, you know, and you guys mentioned this, but just that kindling a friendship now. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, your friendship now is contingent upon things from the past, you know, 40, 45 years, you know.
Right.
And I think you do. You find couples who center their lives around their children.
Yes.
And then when their children are no longer in the same city, they're like, look at each other like, what do we do next?
Yes.
And there's a level of that because your life has, but then there's a level of that that's unhealthy when your identity has been wrapped up in this.
That's true.
Well, thank you guys for just sharing. Thank you for your continued investment into people, you know, for not just for teaching this class, but spending time with younger couples and being an example and being transparent about the good and the hard, and but ultimately how God redeems it all. So again, you want to spend time with Jeff and Linda if you can. So Wednesday nights is throughout March and into April. You can find all information on our website. Thanks for tuning in. We will not have a new episode of Boggy Talk next week because we're going to be gone to a conference trying to become better at what we do. But we'll be back with all the things we learned after that the next week. So thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time. Thank you, guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was great.
You're so good at keeping
the
count. I'll say how you do that.
I know it.
I have to focus.
Thanks for listening to Boggy Talk. We are so glad you joined in the conversation. Go ahead and subscribe so you don't miss a beat.